All right, son, shut the game off. It's time for devotions.
But, Dad...
Jeffrey, come on.
But, Dad, I'm just about to get the high score.
Now, Jeffrey.
But, Dad...
Son?
Dad, these devotions aren't any fun.
Sorry.
Dad!
Well, after all, learning about God's plan for your life and studying the scriptures isn't supposed to be fun, is it? Wrong. As you'll learn on today's edition of Focus on the Family, I'm Mike Trout. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and we're going to talk about training up a child during the next 25 minutes. Doctor?
Mike, I was watching the retirement proceedings, the announcement that was made of Michael Jordan on television last month, and I had a great stroke of inspiration. I seriously considered offering my services to the Chicago Bulls, and you know, I thought this.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at that idea. It was something else earlier that I'd heard.
I thought that it would really be a wonderful thing because I would work at half his salary, you know, and that's a bargain at any price.
It would be fun to see you in a Chicago Bulls uniform, standing there under the basket with all the other giant redwoods.
I can dream anyway, and that would be one of my dreams to be able to do that. And I'm losing hope that it's going to happen. But let me tell you why I brought this up. Because during that retirement ceremony there, some of you may have heard this, that Michael made a comment about some of the pressures that he had faced in professional basketball, but then talked about what he wanted to do with his time, and he wanted to give more of his time to his family, and especially to his children. And he made this statement that really caught my attention. He said something about the fact that being a father was one of the most challenging things that he's ever done, one of the most difficult, and he really wanted to devote himself to that purpose. And I was impressed by that when you consider the pressures that have been on that man. He's almost single-handedly carried the NBA, you know, being the greatest superstar of professional basketball in its history. At least that's what many people think, and I'm one of them. And yet to say that raising children was perhaps his greatest challenge, that puts it in perspective.
It sure does. One commentator, one news reporter said he was going to trade the basketball for the role of Mr. Mom. For Michael Jordan, it didn't sound like that was going to be such a large step.
Well, they ask his wife what would change at home, and she said not much except that he's going to be doing a lot more carpooling. And so I kind of admire that, you know, that a man
too.
Is willing to talk about his family and to go from the heights where he's been to this even more important responsibility at home. And of all the responsibilities that being a good father entails, getting the gospel of Jesus Christ into the hands of your children has to be at the top of the list.
That's number one.
And
it sure is.
May be the most difficult thing that we have to do for some reasons that we want to talk about. In fact, we have invited Robert Wolgemuth to be back with us today. This is your sixth visit.
Sixth broadcast, I think that's right.
Starting in 1983.
You know that better than I.
You have written a brand new book just coming out. Bob, I call you Bob. Everybody else calls you Robert. I've known you for 19 years. Can I still call you Bob?
Sure, Jimbo. Go ahead.
My great friend. The new book is called The Devotional Bible for Dads, and it comes right along the path that we've been talking about.
It's exactly along the path that you've been talking about.
Do you agree with Michael Jordan that raising kids? You've got two girls.
Two girls.
Now two grandkids.
Two grandkids. And yes, it's a huge challenge. Every dad is a rank amateur. When that baby's born, he doesn't have the slightest idea what to do. And like you've said, that's magnified for a Christian dad, a dad who wants to raise his kids in a godly way. He knows what he wants to do, but sometimes doesn't know exactly
how. What are the things that interfere with that? I know there are a lot of Christian men listening to us right now who want to do that job. They know it's paramount. I mean, all of eternity depends on it. And yet they have great difficulty pulling that off.
I would say two things, the will and the tools. You have to have the wanna. I had a wrestling coach when I was in seventh grade who kept saying that. You have to have the wanna. You have to really want to. And if you really want to, that's the first step. Then you have to have the tools. And hopefully what we've worked on here will give a dad the tools. Moms, wives, will give their husbands the tools they need to do exactly what he wants to do. So the first thing is, a guy needs to pray that the Lord gives him the desire to raise his kids in a godly way, and then the tools follow.
What are the impediments? Walk a man through the usual responsibilities at work or what have
you. Sure.
And the difficulty of sitting down with a little kid, or maybe three or four of them who are different in ages, and getting them into the Bible.
A couple of things. You talked about this when you wrote What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women, fatigue and time pressure. A guy thinks that at the end of the day, this is exactly what Mike just said, at the end of the day, his job is finished. But it's just beginning. The problem is he's exhausted. He's had a huge, busy day. And so he has to decide to take the time to do this, to be a leader, a mentor for his children, not only spiritually, but in all areas of discipline, as well as give his wife what she needs. So the truth is that what we have is a dad who needs to be, first, loving and tender to his wife. And then as his kids watch, they get a model for what that looks like. But then he needs to understand that he needs to do this with his kids. Now, all that in the context of being tired and feeling the pressure of other things other than this. It's like exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the first things to go when you get tired, when your schedule fills up. So, again, what we've done is we've made no assumptions that the guy understands that the Bible has some good things to say about him as a man, a husband, and a father. And we've talked to him like I'm talking to you right now. Mm-hmm. Just straightforward, lots of illustrations, some fun things, some humor. I'm sure this is the first NIV Bible with a lot of fun stuff in it, and it's on purpose to just bring a guy along.
Well, let me tell you why I appreciate it. First of all, because of what we've been talking about, that there is no more important responsibility in living for a man who has children than what we're talking about.
That's
here,
right.
And you've developed a tool, as you were talking about before, but also because the secular world is giving a very different message now to mothers and fathers. I don't know if you remember, just a few months ago, a book came out written by Judith Rich Harris. Have you seen that book?
No.
Got a lot of play in the press. Psychologists and psychiatrists were all responding to it, and many of them were in agreement with the thesis of this, what I would consider to be a pseudo-psychologist. I don't even think she calls herself a professional in this area, and yet she got so much attention. She has written a book called The Nurture Assumption. I have a review of it in front of me. The Nurture Assumption, Why Children Turn Out the Way They Do. And the message of it is that parents matter less than you think, and peers matter more. She says the belief that what influences children's development is the way their parents bring them up is wrong. After parents contribute an egg or a sperm filled with DNA, she argues, virtually nothing they do or say, no kind words or hugs, slaps or tirades, neither permissiveness nor authoritarianism, neither encouragement nor scorn, makes a smidgen of difference to what kind of adult the child becomes. Nothing parents do will affect his behavior, mental health, ability to form relationships, sense of self-worth, intelligence, or personalities. What genes don't do, peers do. Have you ever heard anything so crazy in your whole life?
No, my first response is to say something like, gee, that book probably is in the fiction section in your local bookstore. But the other side of it is, I wonder about her story.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder about her relationship with her parents. In fact, it's interesting. Several years ago, I wrote a book called She Calls Me Daddy.
Yes.
And did a lot of call-in radio talk shows, probably 50 of them. I think three of the calls that came in were from men. The rest were from women who were talking about their own relationship with their fathers, either good or bad. My heart goes out to her because she's so wrong. Not more than 60 days ago, USA Today surveyed men. 90% of them said the most important responsibility they have is to raise their children.
Mm-hmm.
90%. So intuitively, we know that she's wrong. Again, we'd like to think that she's right so we can go play golf or whatever and not spend time with our kids.
One more comment on her thesis here. If there's nothing you can do to build character into your children, if there's nothing you can do to build their self-esteem, if there is nothing you can do to do that job right, then there is nothing you can do to do it wrong. And you can beat them up, and you can ignore them, and you cannot talk to them, and you cannot teach them, and you can be mean to them. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter on either side.
It also
if people
takes,
believe this, there are an awful lot of children that are going to suffer.
It also takes me off the hook for living the life in front of my children. If I have no influence on them, then they're not double-checking my conduct. The truth is that the great challenge of being a father is going first, of being the model and then talking, being the model and then leading. If they're not influenced by me, then I can do whatever I want. And to me, that videotape that runs, that camera that's live on me from the time my children open their eyes, is a very cleansing thing. That's a life-changing thing.
You've been talking about the schedule, the busyness of our lives, and I think that includes the children, too.
Sure,
finding time to get together with them because they're off in 100
soccer
different directions.
Practices.
Right. Let me ask both of you a question, because this was a struggle for me. I was always looking for a 20-minute or a half-hour segment where we could sit down and just do this. And I locked up so often because we couldn't slide that much time into our daily lives. Were you successful in setting aside that much time? Do you need to set aside that much time? Can it be just a 5-minute conversation, just an inference along the way? Help me with that.
Piggyback. That's the word. I guess it's two words. Piggyback. What I would say to dads, and this is help that a dad gave me when my kids were small, whenever you can, don't go alone. Take your kid along. See, what sometimes dads are overwhelmed with is setting a situation where it's them and their child, and they're trying to dialogue. You know, now it's time. We're going to have 15 minutes. Let's talk. And they
sit
stare
down,
at each
be
other.
Quiet.
But if I'm going to the hardware store on the weekend, there's no excuse for me to go alone. Take one of my kids, put them in the front seat, strap them in, or in the back seat, in the car seat if they're young enough, and carry them with me. So I'm experiencing life with them. You've said 1,000 times, life is caught, not taught. Life values and character values are caught, not
that's
taught.
Right.
So experience life together as much as you can.
That's,
I would say
that's Deuteronomy 6, by the way.
It is. It's there. Right, as you go in the way, all of those things.
Yeah.
I would say to a dad that travels out of town or that has a job where he spends a lot of time in his car, talk to the kids' school and see if you can get a 2 or 3 day period and make a little road trip out of it, a little field trip out of it, and take your kid along. Let him experience life with you. Again, the videotape keeps your heart clear, and then you're experiencing life together and you're building these memories, as well as doing things like we're talking about here in this Bible. Face-to-face.
Well, let's talk about doing it the way you have described it here in this Bible. You have 260 little devotional thoughts.
Right, they're called daily insights.
Daily insights, where you sit down with the child. Now, what age group are you aiming at here?
There are 260 daily insights that's just me with the dad. What I have really literally done, in fact, I have a very good friend. I won't say his name so I won't embarrass him, but I have a very good friend in Nashville where I live, and I literally wrote this whole project to him. I pretended that I was having these daily insight experiences with my friend Billy every single day, 260 days, Monday through Friday, 52 weeks for the year. And so it's the daily insight is it's actually locked right into the scripture. You turn to Genesis chapter 1, and it suggests reading about 8 verses, and then there's a key verse, and then the insight, about 500 words, says, here's what this scripture says to you as a man, as a husband, or as a father. And there are 260 of those.
You know, I'd like to do something here, Mike. You're a professional reader. You
oh, yes.
read for right. books on tape, and including mine and some others. Why don't you read one of these entries and let's get a feel for what Bob's talking about.
All right. This is called Tell Bobby Hello From Me, and it's taken or based upon Genesis chapter 39, verse 12, the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife when she attempted to seduce him. The scripture says, she caught him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me.
It begins, the seatbelt light went off, and the flight attendant gave her predictable announcement about our being, quote, free to move about the cabin, end quote. It was only then that I noticed the attractive woman sitting in the seat next to me. She looked to be about my age. Her tailored navy suit and crisply starched blouse spoke of her success in business. I turned and said, hello. And she looked up from the book she was reading and smiled, returning my greeting. Over the next hour, we talked. She was single, a stockbroker who lived in Northern Virginia. She worked for a large firm across the Potomac in the shadow of the Capitol building. She was headed home after several days of meetings in Chicago. I asked her where she had grown up. She told me of her parents and siblings. I was curious about her education and her work. She was willing to talk about her schooling, her career, and even her fears and dreams. Our talk was effortless, moving seamlessly from laughter to expressions of deep feelings, then back to laughter again. 10 minutes into the conversation, I felt my pulse quickly begin to quicken. This was more than simply an information-gathering experience. I felt myself mysteriously but unmistakably being attracted to my airplane companion. Her beauty was matched by her tenderness and willingness to disclose some of her deepest feelings. In spite of the fact that I considered myself to be a happily married man, I was taken by this intelligent and extremely articulate woman. And I knew, presumptuous though it may sound, that she was feeling the same. Her willingness to talk openly about her failures and aspirations were a clue. Her occasional touches sealed it. Until the captain informed us that we were beginning our descent into the Washington area, we only talked about her. In fact, she had just suggested that since my hotel was close to the airport and her car was in long-term parking, she'd be happy to give me a ride. For a few minutes, we sat in silence. I'm not sure what she was thinking, but I know that my mind was in a swirl. Then turning to me, she asked, "Tell me about you, Robert." My mind raced through the options. I was alone in a city where anonymity is a sacrament. Like Joseph in Egypt, I was a grown man with the freedom to make any choice I wanted to make. I would probably never be found out. At the same time, 800 miles behind me was a family who loved me. I glanced at my watch. It was bedtime. I could envision Bobby tenderly tucking our two precious girls in with a prayer, a kiss, and an I love you. I could see her crawling into our bed, exhausted from a busy day. I knew she was thinking about me. "I'm in the publishing business," I finally said. "It's a wonderful career, and I love what I'm doing." I paused for just a moment. "And I have a precious wife named Bobby and two little girls who really love their daddy." I reached into my briefcase and pulled out my day planner. Opening to the last few pages, I showed my traveling companion pictures of the girls. Until the plane's wheels screeched our welcome to National Airport, I talked about my home, how I had met Bobby, how much we love each other, and what I enjoyed doing with our daughters. I talked nonstop. My friend was genuinely interested in every detail. As we stood to leave the plane, I thanked her for the offer to take me to my hotel. I told her that I'd be happy to take the shuttle. She understood. "Thanks for telling me about your life," she said, as I pulled my case from the overhead compartment. "I wish more men loved their families like you do." Then, as an afterthought, she added, "Tell Bobby hello for me." "Thank you, Father in Heaven," I remember praying that night as I slipped into bed. "Thank you for a family who loves me so much that they gave their lives to save mine tonight."
That's powerful.
Well, what I'm desperately wanting to do is to include the dad out there that's reading this and say, I understand. We have Joseph in Egypt who's faced with incredible temptation, and I understand there's victory here. And the reason why there's victory is not only God's help in the victory, but those pictures in your wallet, those children who love you, that wife who trusts you.
Does this get shared with children?
No.
You're not suggesting that. This is for the dad.
This is one of the 260, yeah. Monday through Friday. It's yes. Just me and the dad. There are only 52 with the kids.
I understand.
This is just dad reading by himself.
The book is just coming out. I haven't seen it yet. So I'm learning.
But you can launch from that thought.
You could.
That sends you into a conversation with your family.
Sure. And what you do with your children is you reaffirm your love for them by showing them your day planner and the pictures you have of them and why you have those pictures in your day planner.
You have been very vulnerable in this example here. Have you done that throughout the book?
Throughout the book. I talk about a man's temptation with pornography, talk about a business trip one time to Atlanta and walking the streets, and now, with the proliferation of pornography on the internet, a guy doesn't even have to leave his room or his office.
He can hardly get away from
it. It's unbelievable. And so instead of, and men in the Bible face this, instead of saying to the dad, shame on you, what are you doing? Saying, I understand there is victory here, and here are the reasons why there is victory. Really treating it like I'm talking to a real dad.
I'm beginning to understand more what you have done with this book, The Devotional Bible for Dads. You're not only trying to build character in your children. This book is trying to build character in the fathers.
Oh, it has to start there. That's exactly right. It has to start there.
Speaking of character, there's so many destructive role models out there today coming out of Washington, which we can all relate to and otherwise. How do you help your kids learn what character is in a world where Hollywood and the rock music industry and the internet and the pornography industry and sometimes the politicians and others are contradicting everything you believe and are trying to say?
Here's the great hope. It's a great question. Here's the great hope. That almost every person you speak with will say to you that it was my parents who had the greatest influence on me, for good or for ill. And as a child grows up in his home, the dad has the first option. He's handed, and the mom, he's handed an opportunity to have the greatest influence on his child. Now, there are no guarantees. Again, you write about this in your books. Every child is like those balloons that are released at the beginning of a parade. They fly their own way. But what you're doing is you're enhancing the opportunity for being successful in leading your children in grace if you yourself go first as a father. Because you are the most important person, or the mother, the most important person in that child's life in their early development. And nobody disagrees with that, even in professional circles.
Let me repeat in closing an illustration that I've given many, many times over many years. I think I started saying this in the film series in 1978, Focus on the Family film series. But I said at that time that our responsibility as fathers primarily is to get the baton, the gospel of Jesus Christ, into the hands of your children. And you begin your trip around the track holding that baton tightly. You don't often drop it on the backside of the track. You drop it in the exchange from one generation to the next. It's when it comes time to pass it from your hands to the hands of your children that the greatest danger occurs. And the greatest care must be given to that transfer of the gospel, because if everything else in your life goes right and you become president of everything that you wanted to become president over, and you make a ton of money and you have a name that's known around the world and you've accomplished every possible objective and you drop that baton, it will not satisfy.
Do you remember the reason why? Of course you remember why you were so passionate about that when you taped that film series. It was because your father had passed the baton well to you.
Yes, and now it was my turn.
And now he was gone, and your eyes welled up with tears as you talked about it. It happened about a year before that taping.
That's right.
But that's why you were so passionate about that, because your father had handed the baton to you well.
And now for you, I don't experience this yet, but for you, it involves grandkids.
It's an awesome thing.
It starts over,
doesn't
it?
The bumper sticker says, if I had known it was this fun, I'd have had grandkids first.
Someday you'll experience
Yeah, I know. I'm counting on that. The Devotional Bible for Dads, published by?
Zondervan. It's in the NIV, the New
International
You're
going to send
version.
Me a copy.
I will, because it's out
just now.
Now
out.
Yes, it is.
And it's in the stores.
Yes, it is.
Bless you, Bob. Let's
Thank
go for
you.
Number seven, shall we? Or
right.
is it eight, I guess?
It's one of those.
It's good to have you here.
Thank
Give
you.
Bobby my regards.
Thank you very much.
Robert Wolgemuth has been our in-studio guest today. Again, the title of the resource we've been talking about is The Devotional Bible for Dads. If you'd like to get in touch with us here at Focus on the Family, we can be found on the web, and that's worldwide, of course, at family.org. Our managing producer is Jan Nations. Engineering and production were handled by David Salkeld and Steve Ryder. Our producer has been John Scott Welch, and I'm Mike Trout.
inviting you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.